This week on The Deep Dive, we focus on Oxenfree, a supernatural mystery adventure game. The game is developed by Night School Studio with director and designers Adam Hines and Sean Krenkel and composer Scientific. It is recommended that you play the game before listening, as we are going to dive deep, and in the abyss, there be spoilers. I'd also like to preface this episode by apologizing because there is an audio issue on my part and I didn't recognize it until after I was listening to the audio back. However, the conversation was really wonderful and I felt like it would be a disservice to the spirit of the show to not include it due to my own perfectionism. So I hope you enjoy this episode regardless of the audio issue, and rest assured everything will be back to normal next week. Now, without further ado, let's descend. So with me here today, I have the Uber Ginger. I'm also going to call her Ginger here for short for the episode. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been wanting to do a podcast for a while, actually.
This is
we had talked about doing just anything. We talked about talking about anything in particular well before we talked about well before the birth of the Deep Dive. So I'm so glad that we actually get to get together and do something. I still want to do something else in the future, but So we're going to be talking about Oxenfree. So you just played that through recently, right?
I played it, I want to say I played it earlier this year or last year. And I had a lot of thoughts at the time. There was just a lot going on. And then I just finished kind of watching a playthrough to refresh myself. And of course, that like got my brain all...
That brought everything back,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I did the exact same thing. So I think that the first thing that struck me with Oxenfree, aside from the amazing voice acting and the music, mm-hmm. the sound design was incredible. And I mean, the layout design was also incredible, was how seriously it took loss or even just mental illness and depression. Mm-hmm. It just took everything super seriously from the very beginning mm-hmm. and let you kind of slowly uncover that that's what the main character was kind of suffering from, like a great deal of anxiety around loss.
Right.
And it just like let it unwind that way, which I thought was super, super cool.
I agree. I think that kind of perspective with the main character and, you know, her background and learning more, for me, it made me going back through it, think about how much that influenced granted you as the player were making the decisions, but the options that were available were still true to the character. How much that influenced what decisions she might potentially make.
Did you find yourself during your playthrough trying to think about what would she do, or was it more of, did you ever find yourself saying this is what I would do?
Maybe a little bit of both. I mean, I tried to be true to the character, but at the same time, I personally just have a really difficult time with making a decision that I feel like would negatively impact another character. So I definitely have my personal influence in that.
I think that's pretty normal.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times people want to have the, what is that, good or Paragon playthrough to reference Mass Effect. So I think that's pretty normal, but I find that are you a type of a player that will go through a game and play it the one time, or will you go back and play a million different ways to kind of just see what else could be done?
I usually will just do one time, but if there's potential to have different outcomes, then I might go back and play again just to see what might happen.
Yeah. So I used to go through and if there were multiple outcomes or anything like that, I would
immediately go back and, you know, try to see what could have happened. Or if something awful happened during a game, Mass Effect is a good example. Mm-hmm. Something awful happened, I would just reload my save and go back and just try something different so that the awful thing wouldn't occur. But now, especially because streaming, mm-hmm. I try to do one story and let that be my story. And right. then if I want to see a different ending, I go watch somebody else's playthrough, or I don't go through and do it myself, which I find very stressful sometimes. And I did that a little bit. I did that a little bit with Oxenfree.
I think I've become very similar in that I just, with streaming, I don't really have the opportunity to play things multiple times.
Yeah.
So time is a factor. But I think there's something to be said about living with the consequences of your choices in a decision-based game.
Yes. And I feel like sometimes when they let you go back and do a whole bunch of different things, it kind of just takes away the pressure. But the idea that this one playthrough is my story, mm-hmm. or is my Alex's story, then it's, you know, it's just, I don't know. It just, every decision has weight. And I feel like as close to Alex as I can.
Right.
Because I'm trying to make those decisions.
Yeah. But in this one, too, they almost encourage you to play again, where you end up at the final screen where it says continue timeline.
Yes. Yeah.
And that messed with my head so much, because then it was like, was what I just played the start, or was I already in the loop when I played?
Oh, my God. I think I like the idea that you're already in the loop.
Yeah, that's kind of where I've ended up.
Yeah.
Especially because the ghosts, mm-hmm. there was a part where they made a comment about they had seen so many people fail, including Alex failing multiple times, which kind of then pushes me more toward we're already in the loop. I don't know. That's the crazy thing about this game, and what's so cool about it is that there's so many layers. And you can interpret so many things in different ways, because on the one hand, she could have been in the loop already and have gone through this multiple times. On the other hand, we saw that time was fractured and that she was popping in and out of different timelines. So maybe they saw it through that way instead of her being in this loop, you know?
I'm just kind of wrapping my brain around the fact that maybe she was already in the loop in the beginning. And now I'm kind of seeing a whole bunch of different things that kind of like support that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's crazy. I think, can I ask? I mean, I hate to go right to the end here, but I'd love to know what happened in your version, in your playthrough. What ending did you get?
So I had, what were their names? Ren and Nona, they got together.
Mm-hmm.
Alex and Jonas were cool with each other, and Clarissa was saved, and like their friendship was kind of saved, I guess, or improved than it from where it was.
Okay.
And then everybody was on the ferry, but that, I think that's normal.
That's, I think I was missing one person on the ferry.
Wow.
You can revive your dead brother, right? Or
so, yeah, I read something about that where there's like a secret ending that you can get, but you have to play through again, so you have to continue the timeline.
Yeah.
And then there's a point where you can use that to like save him. There's also a way for you to warn yourself not to go to the island at all, and then you completely remove yourself from the loop. But you technically wouldn't save your brother. Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Oh, my gosh. I love time. I love time travel. I love time loops. I love anything. Any stories that are related to time travel. So, yeah, I think I was missing one person. So I think obviously her brother,
mm-hmm.
which I think his name was Michael now. It's Michael.
Like,
it kind of blanks. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But I think there's an ending where not only can you not revive him, but you can destroy your relationship with him, which mm-hmm. I think is pretty crazy. And then your sister can go down as well. Like, I'm shocked that it can get so dark in this game.
Right.
Did you have anybody show up in your playthrough? Like, your friends on your, that had played the game prior to warn you?
I didn't, but I had a friend who he played after I did, like probably a few months after I played, and I popped up in his and he freaked out.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't have anybody in mind because I think I played it right when it came out, but I watched somebody and I didn't even know it was possible. So I was watching their playthrough and then I popped up in their game and they were freaking out and I was freaking out going, what is happening? Right. Like, I'm not doing that.
How do they know I'm here?
It was, yeah, exactly. It was wild. It was crazy. But yeah, so I thought that was a really neat aspect that they added into the game. I kind of wish that it had maybe, I mean, I don't know how they would have done this, but I do sort of wish that it maybe would have had more of an impact. So, you know, if you had listened to a friend, maybe you had a better chance of getting the same ending they got or, you know, something like that.
Right. That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be super neat. But yeah, I feel like I had a couple of notes about the game, about the, what was the place called?
Edwards Island.
Hold on, I wrote it down. Edwards Island, but I think there was one particular, the fort and the submarine.
The submarine was the Canaloa.
Yep, that's it, Canaloa. Which, so when you got there with the radio, how did you, what was your first thought when you got to that whole section? Do you remember feeling like really nervous about it?
Oh, yeah.
I remember thinking to myself, like, okay, this is about to get, like, I don't know what's happening, but it's potentially really bad.
Yeah. It was a mix of fear and curiosity. Like,
yeah, I think the game did that really well, actually. I feel like I went through the whole game kind of mostly terrified, but also very curious. I wouldn't stop keeping, you know, I wouldn't stop going.
Absolutely agreed.
What was your favorite part of the game?
I think the things that stood out for me, and this kind of makes me maybe seem really twisted, but when she was kicking the soccer ball and it like kicked back, like that stood out for me because I was like, am I kicking the ball with myself? What's going on?
Yeah.
You know? And then when in the house towards the end where you were just kind of like collecting information and then Clarissa in quotes was basically kind of telling you what was happening, because that was like the big moment where like, oh my gosh, I understand, they're totally evil now.
Yeah,
so there's that. But then I really enjoyed just also finding the clues that Mrs. Adler had left around the island, and understanding more about the background, like the fact that she, according to her, she's to blame for the Canaloa even going down,
which is impossible.
Right. Well, I mean, according to her, you know, she was working for the military and she made a false call that they did a destroy call, attack call, or whatever on this submarine.
Right.
But the submarine had an experimental nuclear reactor, and then the government covered it up after that happened. So how much of that was planned?
Yeah, how much was planned? And so I just don't like the idea of anybody blaming themselves for one horrific event like that. Like, you don't know that had you not made that call, it wouldn't have exploded on its own anyway and gone down because they planned it, you know?
Right.
So maybe they did just need somebody to take the fall for it.
Right. And then the fact that like they covered it up after the fact.
Yeah.
Makes you think like there was something else going on with that whole.
Yeah, they had it planned. They knew that they were going to take the submarine down.
Right. But she carried that guilt and then decided to buy an island and try to figure out how to fix it.
By like time travel, creating like time loops and stuff. Time, it's one thing I've learned from fiction, it's that time travel will solve nothing.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, the butterfly effect. I always think about that movie, even though, yes, it's an Ashton Kutcher movie, but
It's a really good one.
I really enjoyed it. And just the fact that like every little thing has these ripples that you never can possibly plan for. And so while time travel would be really cool, a la Doctor Who, it's just also a really frightening prospect about what are the potential pitfalls.
Yeah. I always really enjoyed the time travel stories where no matter what you did, like if you were trying to go back in time to change something in some sort of timeline, it led you to exactly where you were before, because otherwise it doesn't make sense that you can change history.
Right.
Other than what you know. So I always enjoy stories that kind of tie themselves together like that.
Well, then, because like if you could change time, if you could travel back in time, so you go and you change that thing, then you never would have ended up in the situation where you got to the point that you could travel back in time.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
You would erase the possibility of you ever going back and changing anything anyway.
Yeah. Unless what you do leads up to the point where you are able to go back in time and you just don't realize it. You don't realize that you were the one that caused the event that you wanted to change. Yeah. That's my favorite concept. I think there's another film. I don't know if you ever saw it. The Lake House.
I vaguely remember that one.
Yeah. It's got Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves in it. And it's like, it's okay. There are some things that could be better, but they follow that same pathway where, you know, yeah, you can go back in time, but what you do is, you know, leads you to the point. They do. If I remember correctly, they do the time travel right, as far as I'm concerned, which I enjoyed. But there were some other things that could have been better about the film. But I, again, it's a time travel that I really enjoy.
Talking about stuff like that, I mean, I'll totally go on tangents, but if you haven't seen the 12 Monkeys TV show.
I have not. I didn't even know they were making a TV show of 12 Monkeys.
Yes, they just finished the final season. So it's like it's a finite thing, which I love when shows are they have a beginning and an end. I don't like things that go on forever.
I like them to be meaty.
Yes.
But I would like an end. Yeah, I agree.
So they made that. And like there's definitely that whole cause and effect thing going on, and I think it's great. You definitely have to watch it.
Yeah, I will totally. I would love this stuff. This I could honestly talk the entire episode just about time travel and how much I love it. So yeah, I definitely could. So before we go back to the game, another good time travel film that I really enjoyed is a Spanish film, and it's called Time Crimes.
Oh, I've never
seen
that.
So I don't know if you've seen that. Oh man. It's really good, and I can't tell you anything about it, but you should watch that. It's really cool.
It's really good, and I can't tell you anything about it.
Yeah. I don't, well, because I don't, you know, like I already told you enough that there's time travel involved, and I don't want to spoil it any more than that, you know? Like I feel like you get so much out of things by just watching them without knowing much about it.
Oh,
so.
For sure. Yeah, I don't like watching trailers for that reason.
Yeah, me either. I hate trailers. I mean, I sort of do. I used to, actually. I used to really love trailers, but I feel like
they spoil so much now.
Now they spoil everything, and they didn't back then. Back then.
Back in my day.
Yeah, they really didn't. I feel like they didn't. I feel like they just gave you a taste, and it was enough. But now it's like they show you all the action scenes. They show way too much for my taste. So
they
now I just
you,
don't
like,
watch them.
The Cliff's Notes version of the movie, and you're like, okay, well,
yeah,
I feel
that's
caught
exactly
up.
What they do. Okay, like, okay. But I wonder if they do that to set expectations.
Maybe.
You know, like I feel like nowadays people get so upset if they go to the movie and it's not what they were expecting. Like we went to see Blade Runner, the new Blade Runner.
Uh-huh.
And I'd say about 6 to 9 people walked out of that theater.
Are
halfway
you serious?
Through that film. I'm dead serious.
Oh my gosh.
And I don't know if it's because they were younger.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not sure if it's because they were expecting like an action-packed film or because they had never seen the original Blade Runner and didn't know what to expect. And the trailers, to be fair, did not paint the film as much like the original. It seemed more action-packed in the trailer. But I wonder if they do that to kind of
just
show
marketing.
You. This is exactly what you're going to get. Here, I'm going to show you the whole trailer, like the synopsis of the film. This is what to expect. Great. Cool. And then you go and you spend your money and you're satisfied. But I don't know if that would satisfy me.
No.
I don't want to know everything about it.
Yeah. No.
But that's something actually to not to bring it back to the game so quickly, but that's no, actually fine. Something that I did appreciate about Oxenfree is that I don't feel like I felt like I knew exactly where it was going. At one point I was like, is this going to get super alien and really weird? Like,
right.
I worried that it was going to get really bizarre. And by worried, I mean, I just wasn't sure what to expect. It's not like that would have been bad.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, then when they threw in the time travel and everything, I was just super pleased with that. I was very, very hooked.
Yeah. I hate when I play a game and I can get through, like, I don't know, some section of it and I can predict everything else that's going to happen.
Yeah. That's like, why am I even playing it at this point?
Yeah. It just follows your standard sci-fi tropes and like, okay, well, I've seen this before, you know, but at the same time, the completionist in me has to just finish it just to see what happens.
Yep, just keep going.
Yeah.
Are you the same way with books?
Yes.
Oh my God. It's like awful.
Yeah.
I will read a book. It's terrible and I hate it. And I just will force myself to keep pushing through it. But then I do this whole avoidance thing where I'll set the book down and I look at it. I'm like, oh, I should read so that I can move on to this other book. But I don't want to. So I never pick it up. And so then I don't get through the book. But then when I finally either give up on the book or I finish it, I'll pick up another book that's really good that I enjoy and I'll plow through it. And then I'll do that for another three or four books. So I'll read like four books in 1 week and then I'll hit another one that is not so good and get stuck because I'm forcing myself to go through it. I just don't know how to get over that hump where I don't do that anymore.
Right. Yeah. It's like, yeah. At what point do you're like, okay, this is enough.
Yeah.
I'm done.
This is enough.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't reached that. I can't help you.
Yeah. I have not reached that state of enlightenment, so I don't know.
Right.
But yeah, I would just like to be better about that. But I didn't have that with this game, which was really, really nice. I was along for the ride and there were parts where I kind of saw some stuff coming, but then mm-hmm. there was stuff that I wasn't expecting at all. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting at all. I was not expecting to have be punched in the feels with this game because I thought it was going to be like a little bit of a horror game.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that bit at the end with Michael.
Yeah.
I couldn't handle that. Yeah. I cried quite a bit.
Yeah.
Actually, like, now that I'm
rattling off the life advice, like just in case I'm not around, I'm like, no.
Yeah. And I think I'm actually sorry. I actually just went back to remember that I actually cried quite a bit during the end of this game because, yeah, it kind of hit me in a spot where I think their dialogue, I'll have to re-listen to their dialogue.
Yeah.
But yeah, their dialogue reminded me of a friend of mine that I lost in high school. That it was back when I feel like having friends on the internet was kind of just not cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I had a lot of friends on the internet at that time.
Yeah.
We were really close. Called each other on the phone, mm-hmm. and you know, kind of stuff like that. Racked up those long distance fees. And this friend of mine passed away, and just didn't sign on anymore. And that was like really, really stressful to kind of just stressful is a mild way to put it to just kind of look at their name in your instant messenger chat log and just mm-hmm. see offline and just know that they're never going to sign back on, you know, that. And then when comes to the point where you remove them,
yep.
Do you remove them? You know, it's like, oh man.
Oh,
and I think they had some sort of conversation like that. She mentions that, like, I can't get rid of these things because these are his things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate to that. Mm-hmm. My grandparents joined Facebook just to keep up with me. And I don't really log into it anymore. But every time I do, it's like, it, you know, shows me them in some way, which it's one of the reasons why I hate Facebook. But, you know, it's just always like they're in my messenger thing showing offline or, you know, it's just like, okay. But I feel like removing them is wrong.
Yeah. Because you can't get them back. Wow. Yeah. That's, yeah.
Like I can't add them back later on.
Yeah.
Once I
if
remove
them. If I change
them,
my
like,
mind. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're gone.
Yeah, they can't accept it. Wow. Okay. right to the feels. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. You have feelings. It's okay.
Yeah. I think Facebook's really bad for that, but also really good. But also it perpetually puts you in a state of weird nostalgia. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you've ever gone back to, you know, somebody from high school adds you or requests to add you. So you go take a peek and see what they're up to. And then you're kind of like, oh, yeah, I remember they used to be pretty cool. No, they didn't. They were a jerk. They were 100% a total jerk. You're just kind of romanticizing, you know, them or your time in high school, or you're missing a period of your life that, you know, it's actually great that you're not in that period of your life anymore. But because Facebook only shows you like the highlight reels, basically, mm-hmm. the stuff you bothered to put on Facebook 5 years ago or, you know, 7 years ago, then you're going to, it's just kind of it's your curated life you're only remembering, you know, you're only remembering the good parts.
Right. Yeah. And then just the, hey, you know, 5 years ago this happened and maybe it's something I didn't really want to think about right now, but now you forced that on me.
Yeah. Like, my grandpa actually, I have an album that I shared from, you know, going back home and visiting, and it's like one of the only albums that I have on Facebook because, I just put it up there so my family could see it, so my family could get at it, because we took a whole bunch of photos with everybody, right?
Yeah.
And it's like one of the only ones I uploaded because I didn't bother uploading my vacation or anything like that. So every once in a while, people will comment on my grandpa's picture I have of my grandpa. And I realize that everybody is individually doing it kind of for their own healing process, because my grandfather passed away a couple of years ago now. And I realize that, you know, the comments they're leaving, you know, they know he's gone, and they're saying things like, you know, really miss you, or, you know, things like that. And, but it pops up on your timeline. Like, this person commented on this photo that you took. So it's like, if I wasn't expecting that, holy cow, you know, boom, there you go. Monday morning, here's your coffee. Oh, also, by the way, if you weren't over this, here you go, you know? So I wish there was some way that you could notify Facebook, because there are, you know, like my grandpa or a couple of my friends from high school, you know, that have passed away that I refuse to remove. You know, I really wish that, that Facebook had some way of being like, okay, let's maybe not.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Just thinking about that is like hitting me. Just if someone were to comment on something,
And I don't know. It feels weird, because they tell you to move on from a loss like that. They tell you, you know, a little bit of purging and stuff like that is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But with Facebook, you really, you know, you kind of can't, because it's like you said, once you remove them, you can't add them back. So I'm not removing this person, and Facebook hasn't removed their account. But I heard once that Facebook, if somebody was marked as deceased, they would remove it after, like, you know, or make it super private so no one can see it after 10 years or something like that. And I've always been really terrified of that. Like, I hope they don't do that, because this is, you know,
what would you lose?
It feels like they're erasing someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would you lose if you do? Well, I don't know, because, you know, and maybe this is bad, but sometimes I do go and visit, like, my friend Brandon is a common example, really close in high school, and he passed away suddenly in a motorcycle accident.
Mm-hmm.
So I do occasionally, you know, go back and check on him and or leave a message on his profile page and just say, you know, thinking of you, blah, blah, blah. And that's like, that's my healing process. Luckily, it doesn't notify anybody, because it's not like I'm commenting on a picture. I'm just going to his wall. At least I hope it's not notifying anybody. But I just, you know, I sometimes just go and I look and I see what other people have said and left. And it's kind of like a neat way to remember him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I live too far away to go to his grave, you know, so I can't go and visit and pay respects that way. But, you know, sometimes when I'm thinking about him, I do like to go and I like to read what everybody said and read their, because the most beautiful thing is people don't just say like, oh, I missed you. People have taken to sharing a memory that they've had with him just on the wall for somebody else to read. You know, and see, like, I remember a time that, you know, Brandon did this really funny thing and blah, blah, blah. And we laughed for days, you know, it was just, you know, something like that. And I like reading that, because I, you know, it helps me A, remember him and kind of see.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's beautiful.
It's like
but
a good way to pay respects. Yeah.
I also think you should only see those things when you're prepared to read them and in that headspace.
Yeah. For example, if, you know, his sister, if it popped up on her timeline, that would mortify me. I would not want that to happen on a Monday morning or for, you know,
right,
10 years down the road. It's just like this constant reminder. And when's the point where you move on? And does move on mean letting go, or does move on mean just letting rest? You know, there's a difference between letting somebody go and just letting them be, you know, and resting in kind of like in your life and in your moving on. I think anyway, at least it helped me to think of it as not letting go of someone.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if you can ever truly let go, you know, it's always going to be there and those memories are always going to be there. So
I think it's really strange to think about how everyone will experience loss at some point.
Yeah.
You know, my mom used to say that, you know, everybody's going to go through this at one point. And my mom lost her mom when she was, I think, 21 or 20. Wow. So very young. And she rarely talks about it with me. And I don't want to share too much of it on the podcast because obviously it's her story. But
yeah,
I do remember her saying, you know, it never goes away. You will always be sad mm-hmm. when you think of this person or this thing that has happened. And I just remember not really understanding that until I lost somebody, until I lost a very good friend, you know, and about the same age, you know?
Yeah.
And then it was kind of like, okay. And every once in a while you think of something and it reminds you of that person. And I don't know how to let people know. 'Cause I feel like I'm at the stage now with a couple of people that I've lost that I want to share mm-hmm. happy parts, but I don't know how to bridge that gap between the happy part and also saying, oh yes, my friend passed away. Here's a cool memory though. This is what made me think of my friend that has passed away, if that makes sense. I know I'm not being very articulate now, but I guess I wasn't really expecting to to talk about it. But I know that when a friend tells me about somebody that they've lost, like I have an alarming number of friends that have lost a parent at a young age. Mm-hmm. So I know that sometimes when that comes up, I know I try to make an effort now to say, oh, tell me, mm-hmm. you know, tell me about, you know, your dad, or, you know, tell me about your mom and, you know, what made you think of them right now in this moment? Was it a memory that you had? What was it? I'd love to hear it.
Right.
Because I feel like that's a good way to kind of remember them and also kind of get closer to my friend and also just let them go through that healing process without it being weird of like, oh yeah, my parent died or, you know, something like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm rambling now.
No. I totally feel all of that. I lost friends when I was younger, but I don't know. I feel like I shielded myself from really feeling a lot of it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
For various reasons, but it wasn't until I lost my grandmother that like I really understood what loss felt like. So, you know, I understand a lot better now and how to be there for other people. Because there's never anything that you can say or do, but not leaving that empty, awkward air is probably the most kind thing, you know, and to ask if they're comfortable to tell you something about them or, you know, to like where they're at and just listen. Yeah.
Just listen. It's so important. And for just providing that space also, I feel like.
And to bring it back to the game, there was a point where I noticed that everyone was around the bonfire. This was like very early in the game. And maybe it was later. I don't know. But Ren was telling a story to Jonas about Alex, and Alex was there. And they were talking about some test that she like dipped out of to go help him with something. And it came up like why, you know, she was not in the greatest headspace or whatever. And like, that wasn't typical of her, what happened. And she said, well, my brother Michael had just died a few days before. And he was like, yeah, but this isn't a story about him. And just like totally glossed over that. And it was small, but it really hit me. I'm like, this is supposed to be one of her best friends. And like, what kind of friend are you that you're just like, yeah, but that, you know, this isn't important right now. Like, really? That was the way that you chose to handle that?
Yeah. Yikes. Yeah. I feel like a lot of people get really uncomfortable around death, or around particularly when someone they really care about has lost somebody profound to them, because it's like they're in constant pain and you don't know how to stop it or you don't know what to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, totally agree with you. Ren is kind of strange.
Yes.
To her, their relationship is a little bit weird. But at the same time, I feel like he's 15 or 16 and he probably doesn't know what to do. Like, this is so crazy. But my best friend in high school lost her mother while we were in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember not knowing what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember feeling really uncomfortable, but just sitting in that discomfort. Yeah, I remember. Okay. So specifically, I think it was the day after it had happened.
Mm-hmm.
I just was over at her house to just be there mm-hmm. with her. And everybody was sitting in the living room. No one was saying anything. And her dad was just like chain smoking and no one was speaking. They were just like sitting there silently. And I was sitting there silently. And I just remember feeling really uncomfortable, but also like, hey, man, they're not even paying attention to me right now. It's not even they don't even give a shit about small talk. So just sit there, sit there for your friend, And I remember her bringing that up like a year or so later, being like, that must have been really weird for you and very uncomfortable. But thank you, because it just really helped to not be by myself in my thoughts. I was there with my thoughts, but I didn't feel like I was alone. That's super important. Yeah. And I feel like now I try to go out of my way. If somebody I care about loses somebody close to them, I give my condolences right away.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wait now about a month or a month and a half. And then I invite them to lunch or dinner or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know now from experience that everybody's really kind to you in the beginning. Not that people become unkind, but people move on and forget. And there's this unexpected,
it just kind of drops
assumption
off.
That you will. Yeah, it just drops off. People just stop paying attention, or it stops being the forefront. Or, in the beginning, they're like, oh, God, I'm so sorry. I know this happened. Or they'll say something and then they'll say, oh, shit, I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. But then after a month or two, they stop remembering to say that. And not that they need to say it. They don't need to say it. But just the fact that you realize suddenly it's no longer in the forefront of anybody else's mind. And then you're kind of upset. You're angry. You're like, but I just lost, my best friend or my grandpa or, whoever. And I'm mad that no one's remembering this, So it's super upsetting. So I now try to wait and for that period. And then I am like, I sit down and I'm like, how are you? Don't feel the need to bullshit me. I got you. Like, right. I know exactly what's going on. Just tell me how much it sucks. I got you. And then we kind of just cry over, ramen or whatever. but usually it's like, I find that that's that sweet spot anyway. That's something that I try to do when I notice somebody has lost somebody.
That's good. I actually learned a really hard lesson about that when I was 16. One of my best friends at the time, her mom passed, and I was with her when she got the news.
Oh, God.
And I just froze. I didn't know what to do. I'm sorry. And, what can I do? And, but I just kind of like, I don't know what to say. I've never experienced this. I've never been around someone who's experienced this beyond like distant relatives that I wasn't close to. And So yeah, it was a really awkward time. I just tried to be there for her in the beginning. And then I was also at a stage in my life where I thought your mama jokes were really funny.
Oh no.
And I made one.
Oh no.
Yeah. I wasn't aware of what I was saying. It was just like of almost course not, like
because yeah, you forget.
Yeah, it was just I did it so much that it was almost just like breathing at this point, you know, I just made these jokes. And a bunch of us were hanging out in the band room at school, and I don't remember what was happening, and I made a your mama joke, and she just, like, her face just fell and was like, I can't believe that you just said that to me. And then it just, like, my whole body just went cold. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't believe I just did that.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it still bothers me. And it's been a long time.
Yeah. But you can't really, I mean, I hope that you don't.
I try to be more aware of my words is what I've taken from that. And
yeah, but also, you know, you were very young, 16. And sometimes when you're comfortable with someone, you just don't think. You don't think about what you're, you know, saying and or doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you maliciously tried to hurt her. Yeah.
Oh, right.
It hurt her and it, you know, it was a mistake, but I hate to think that you're punishing yourself for, you know, years and years and years, but
no, not so much punishing myself. It's just, it was a big mistake that,
yeah,
you know, I think about, and every time I catch myself talking without thinking first, that's immediately what my mind goes to, is like, don't have this Cheryl situation happen again.
Don't let this happen again. Yep. I think I'm trying to think now of a moment where I definitely had to put my foot in my mouth. Oh, I can think of one. Oh man, it was real bad. Okay. So since you shared one, I'll share one. my sister, okay. This is like so crazy of a story, and I can't even believe that this is like something that happened in my life. But my sister, this good friend in high school, was actually murdered by his mother. But originally, when the news broke, they thought it was suicide. So I was like, come watch this movie. I'm trying to make her feel better. This is the week that this has happened. Okay. I'm thinking like 3 or 4 days after. And I tell her, we need to watch this movie. That'll make her feel like, I'm trying to comfort her. And I'm like, oh, come, we're going to watch this movie. I'm embarrassed to even say the name of the movie because it should give me a clue that I should not be sitting her down to watch this movie. It's called Wrist Cutters, A Love Story. It opens with a suicide. And she's like watching we're watching the opening. So of course I don't know anything about the movie, right? Because I don't watch trailers, but I should have known based on the title.
Yeah.
But it was supposed to be this like quirky comedy about like, you know, kind of sort of about death, which is probably not good. Just not good all around. I shouldn't have done that. But it was, you know, a group of us and we wanted her to come and hang out with us and, you know, kind of just try to help. We were trying to help. But anyway, it was like 5-10 minutes into the film and, you know, the awful thing's happening and she's just really upset and she's like, I'm just sorry, I can't watch this, and I can't believe you asked me to watch this, and then like went upstairs. Oh, no. And I felt terrible. So yeah, it was pretty awful. And then that whole thing is crazy because when they did find out that it was murder, they had to go through the loss all over again. You know, it's you know, it's just this like, oh, you think this one thing has happened, and yeah, it was just it was a pretty messed up thing that happened in school for her, and I fucked up there. I feel really badly about that. So I do think of that on occasion, and I haven't watched the movie since because I feel badly every time I start to watch it. I'm like, oh God, that one time that I was an idiot.
Right.
Yep.
Oh no.
But this game is great, and everyone should play it.
Oh God. So
yes, so go ahead.
Talking about the game, I felt like there were a few themes at play.
Yes.
One was obviously time, but not just in the literal sense of time travel or time breaking, but there was like a repeated message about sort of using the time that you have, or like at, especially with these kids, you know, being younger, that that they should appreciate this time in their lives and not almost like don't squander it in a way.
Yeah.
So there was that. I also felt like on the other side of time, regrets. So yes, they toward at the end, in the end scene, they were reading a quote from a book, and I want to say it was like a Mark Twain quote, where I wrote it down. Soon I will not remember any but the things that never happened. And so I read that as the regrets of the things that you never did.
Yes.
And just that, you know, that directly ties in with time, because, you know, you only have so much of it. In that end scene was also a conversation about the things that they saw when they were like in their possessed state, and they were seeing things from their past. And Nona said something about they were only seeing the things that were important to them. And Clarissa says, the universe doesn't care what happens to us. Which, I mean, that every time I think about like the scale of the universe and where we sit in it, it always just like, that's a multi-hour thinking session for me. But
yeah,
just the fact that if the things that you do truly don't matter to the universe, then why not do them anyway? Assuming that you're not hurting other people or, you
yeah,
know,
exactly,
whatever. But why aren't you doing them anyway?
That's actually a form of, this is the second podcast where this has come up, and I still haven't taken the time to look up the type of existentialism that it is, but that is a form of existentialism. And I actually subscribe to that. If I were to put myself into a box and say, I believe this, that is absolutely what I believe. I believe, okay, well, if we're so insignificant in the grand scheme of things as far as the universe goes, then we make our own significance. Then our life is even that much more precious and valuable, because we're the only one going to have this particular one. I'm the only one that's going to have this particular experience out of the millions and millions and millions and millions of, you know, people and space dust everywhere. You know, I'm this one. I'm all of this came together to form me, you know? So I feel like, and that's just my personal belief, obviously, but
yeah.
Yeah. I think that can usually wind up in a very long thought spiral for me as well. But I think that that's very powerful when you think, okay, well, why not do the things that I want to do or that I'm afraid of, or why not live my life, you know, to the fullest, or
right.
What's stopping me? I'm stopping me.
Right.
That's it.
Because you never know when this nuclear reactor is going to blow up and fracture time, and then you get stuck in another dimension. So, you know, just do those things now before that happens.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know what's going to happen. Well, I do sometimes have, even though I know that, you know, life is short, you know, like my existence is finite, I'm still not okay with that. You know, I'm okay with that, in that I want to live my life to the fullest, and I want to make sure that I'm, you know, doing things that enrich my existence or my experience of my existence. But I still am terrified that we're going to get bombed. For example, there was an old school American fighter plane that flew overhead the other day, and I was momentarily very frightened, thinking, oh my gosh, this is it, we're gonna get bombed now. Like I don't remember having this irrational fear of death coming at any moment when I was very religious. I don't remember that happening. So I'm just shocked that that's kind of happened on its own, if that makes sense.
To go down that rabbit hole,
yeah,
I've had this theory for a long time that the folks who are very religious also have a belief in an afterlife. So why would you be super fearful of death if you believe that there's some happy place that comes after? And
or potentially a bad place.
I mean, potentially a bad place, but yeah. I mean, that starts getting into the whole using fear to make people behave.
Yep.
But if you don't subscribe to those beliefs, then you become more acutely aware of how much time you have to accomplish the things that you want to before that time runs out.
Yeah. So then, you know, you hear a plane go overhead and you're like, I'm not ready. I'm not ready.
Yeah. I mean, it, not to say that you should live in fear, but
I don't. It's just occasionally, but I just don't remember having such gripping fears of things like that. Like, I grew up on a tropical island and I used to be fearless in the ocean and the water. Mm-hmm. And now I have this crippling fear of the ocean and the deep water. Yeah. It's like, you know, I've gone back in the ocean a couple of times in the last couple of years. And it's like, it's heart stopping almost looking down into the nothingness. And I never had that before. So where did that come from? You know, it's just kind of weird stuff like that. Like,
you think it comes with knowledge about the ocean though?
No, because I knew I wanted to be a marine biologist. I honestly,
that's
and
funny,
it's not
I wanted
necessarily,
to once too.
Yeah. It's not necessarily the creatures that scare me. It's mm-hmm. the vast unknown.
Mm-hmm.
It might be, and I think this is the closest I've ever gotten to really firming up what it is, but it's that I suddenly realize how small I am mm-hmm. in the big scheme of everything, and I'm just have a very visual representation of my existence, of how small and how short it is.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm in the deep, deep ocean and I can't see the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't see to the right or to the left of me. And, you know, I wonder in the distance, there's a whale that's like 100 times my size. You know, I just realize suddenly that, wow, I am a bacteria, you know, like I'm so small.
Yeah. No, I get that. We've been on a couple of cruises and every time we're out on the water, I get a bit scared. Because what if something happens and we're out here? And yes, they have safety measures and all of that. But thinking about, you know, when you're out, like out in the ocean, not just near a coast or whatever, how deep that is scary.
Yeah, no thanks.
But yeah, I totally was like, yeah, a marine biologist. Oh, sounds great.
Yeah, so same. I really wanted to do that. And in fact, when I was in school, a marine biologist talked me out of it, kind of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they just kind of said they were, and I appreciated it. They were very real with me, just saying, like, setting expectations and saying, you know, you have to be prepared to run uphill for the rest of your life. You know, you're going to constantly be fighting that the oceans are being destroyed and you're going to watch that happen. And there's nothing you can really do about it.
Yeah.
You can try and you can maybe delay it, but, you know, people don't really listen. So you're going to be fighting uphill for that. And either you're going to be stuck working with animals in like SeaWorld, which will be awful.
Yeah.
Or you're going to be doing research, mm-hmm. which where you're just watching as the years go by, you're literally just watching everything die. And they were much more, they were gentle about it,
But that was the basic message.
That was the message, yeah. And I am really glad that I didn't do that because I would just be depressed all the time. I don't have the fortitude to just kind of separate myself. Like I watch the big blue planet or planet Earth and I sob when an animal kills another animal. It's mm-hmm. just absurd. It's absolutely absurd. But I feel like as I get older, I get weepier, if that makes sense. But,
oh, so me too. And I'm like,
right? Okay. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I used to be stone cold, man. Nothing bothered me.
Now I'm like, I watched a commercial and I'm like, oh,
yes.
No.
Yeah. I'll watch a commercial and I'll just start crying. Or, you know, I'll watch 5 minutes of Planet Earth and go, am I about to watch somebody get killed? And then have to turn it off. You know, it's absurd.
I like to think that I've just become more tapped into my empathy. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, I like that. I think that we can both go with that. I like that a lot. Speaking of empathy, actually, this does remind me of something in the game. There was a part, I think there's an ending that you can get where no one remembers, like your sister, I think, can die and be sacrificed, but nobody remembers except for Alex. Like nobody remembers her in the repeat or in the aftermath. And that is traumatizing to me. Like that is so cool. That's such a cool concept and also just horrifying to just lose somebody. And then also nobody remembers them, but
I thought that erased from time. Like what is that?
Yeah. I thought that that was actually done on purpose. And I thought that that was done as, you know, kind of a metaphor to show you what it feels like to lose somebody like an immediate family member. Everybody else kind of doesn't really remember them except for you. Nobody will remember them the way you will remember them. I thought that was very interestingly done. And it relates to what we were talking about earlier with like Facebook and memories and stuff like that. It just made me remember that you can do that. And I remember that really shocking me when that happened and thinking, well, yeah, this is exactly what real life is like. They're just trying to explain it to somebody who maybe hasn't either lost someone or been close to somebody who's lost someone. Like, I feel like this is a great game to play. Like, I wish I had played this when my best friend lost her mom, you know, like I wish that I had been able to play this to kind of just get an idea of what she was going through, or, you know, just a better way to do this together and then open that dialogue to be able to have that discussion after.
Right. And I think going back to consequences that not even thinking about just like the relation to loss, but the consequences of you making the decision that got you to the point where she's gone and everyone is forgotten. Yeah. And you remember, you have that guilt, presuming that you're guilty about it. But, you know, that's a consequence that you have to live with. And I think that's something that they did really well in Oxenfree is there were a lot of decisions that you made, even just in terms of like dialogue, that seemed inconsequential, but had effects later on. And I dislike in games where you have sort of a multiple choice and then in the end it's like, well, you just ended up in the same place that you would have anyway, because then I went through all this stress of trying to figure out what is the right choice, because that's what I do. So while it's stressful to think that I might have made the wrong choice and I'm living with the consequence of having done that, I also want to know that my choices have meaning, which I think is just, you know,
oh boy, that is a rabbit hole right there. I think that it's interesting to think that you can make a right or wrong decision when it comes to dialogue with somebody. Obviously there is, you know, there are things to do and things not to do, you know, like I should think before inviting my sister to watch that film. You know, I wasn't thinking, right? But obviously there's a right and a wrong in that kind of situation. But I mean, I think it's interesting to think of our lives in a right and a wrong instead of just different. I could have gone to this school. I could have dropped out. I could have done this. Which one was the right or the wrong decision? Well, none of them are right or wrong. They're just different. Your life is just different. So I actually find it super interesting that a game will present me with a whole bunch of different choices and I can, you know, stress about those, but I end up in the same spot anyway, because that's like life. Sometimes you will make a different decision and think, well, shit, I should have made this one, but you would have ended up in the same spot anyway. Or maybe you wouldn't have, maybe you would be having a different life, but that life will have problems with it as well. No life is going to be perfect. No choice is necessarily the right one or the wrong one. It's just different. And I feel like that's like, that has been incredibly important for me to realize in my adult life, so that I cannot look back on choices with either remorse, regret, or worry. You know, like I think to myself sometimes for a long time, I thought, oh crap, you know, I worked really hard to go through the first 3 years of school and I didn't finish because I was, I didn't have a scholarship or anything like that. Because I was too terrified to apply, if you can believe that. for anything. Like, I didn't do anything. I just went through. I was like, I'll just go. It'll be fine. And I had three jobs and I was trying to pay as I went so that I wouldn't have any debt.
I did the same thing.
Yeah. And I got all the way through like year three or something like that. And then I stopped because either I got a good job. I got a really good job that I would only need to work one job while I was going to school. Mm-hmm. But then it turned out the job was actually pretty emotionally draining, but I was really good at it. And then I got promoted and then I was like, who needs school? You know, it was just kind of like one of those things where I just kept doing the job. And then for a long time, I felt horribly shameful about that. Like, oh, I didn't finish going to school and I put so much effort and money into it and I was so close. And, mm-hmm. and now I'm like, well, I'm kind of glad that I didn't do that, mostly just because, not glad per se, but I realized that it wasn't a wrong decision. It wasn't a wrong choice. It was just a different one. And I'm still in a great place because of, you know, because of the choice that I made. And yeah, I may have finished school, but who knows? Maybe I would have turned into, you know, I would have had more debt or something. You know, I don't know what would have happened, you know, so I,
right.
It's not a good idea to necessarily romanticize what could have happened in that choice.
Yeah, so. It's so funny because we have very similar stories in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, I think about sometimes, like I paid my way through school because mm-hmm. I also didn't apply for scholarships. But I also had considered going to a music conservatory. And so sometimes I'll think about, you know, what would have happened if I pursued that path. And but I also, you know, found a job and just kind of pursued that. But then, I don't know, something that I kind of have recently learned, and I'm trying to apply that in multiple things. You probably have read The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up.
Yes, I have actually.
Okay. So in that, she talks about, you know, if you purchase something like a piece of clothing and you don't end up wearing it, and rather than being focused on, you know, well, I spent this money, you know, so this is a waste.
Yeah.
It's more of a lesson that you learned that that wasn't the right thing for you.
Yes. And I think that that's absolutely incredibly insightful.
I love it. And so I've been trying to apply that in other ways to say, okay, well, you know, yes, I could have gone down this other path, but clearly at the time that wasn't the right thing for me.
Yeah.
Because this is, you know, I was in this other place, which brought me to where I am. So going back
and
to the time travel thing.
For the world, right? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
If I hadn't made the set of choices that I made, I wouldn't be where I am now. So,
and I love me and where I am now. So I don't want to change any of that. Yeah, I agree with that. So it's crazy that you say you wanted to go to a music conservatory. I was going to go to acting school. I got in and everything and I just didn't go. And then I just went to a different school that I felt was, you know, closer to home and less scary, you know.
Yep.
And yep, all those things. So that's crazy. That's crazy that we have that in common. I saw this random YouTube video today that my friend sent me that I will have to send to you after this podcast is over. But in it, she's a minimalist. And in it, she talks about your fantasy self. And I actually, I'm going to look up her name because I want to, if I'm going to talk about it, I want to say it in the... it's Janelle Christina, for those of you who are listening, and I will make sure to link it in the description. But she talks about this one video. She talks about your fantasy self. And I think the video is titled, Is Your Fantasy Self Toxic? So those of you listening, you can just Google that. But in this video, she talks about a very fascinating thing about how everybody has an idea of who they think they should be or who they want to be. And some people have multiple fantasy selves, as she calls it. But she says, you know, maybe your fantasy self likes the idea of cooking. So she'll say people will buy things because they want to be the type of person that enjoys this specific thing.
Mm.
So she says sometimes people get in the trap of, you know, for example, you want to go to the gym, you want to work out. So you find yourself buying a whole bunch of gym clothes or gym equipment, but you never use it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not the type of person that currently goes to the gym. Or, you know, not saying that you shouldn't try to better yourself and go for those things that are stopping you, but also don't just try to be aware of this trap that you can put yourself in. So an example she gave was maybe you don't really enjoy cooking and you collect cookbooks because you're hoping that by buying cookbooks, it'll force you to cook or, you know, you'll cook more, or you want to be the type of person that likes to cook. Or maybe you want to be a minimalist, she said, but maybe you just, you're not the, maybe you're not a minimalist and you're not that type of person. And that's like, I was watching it thinking, I'm feeling personally attacked because all of these things, like the gym clothes at the time, the cookbooks, like the minimalism I wanted, I feel like I've wanted to be that or live that lifestyle for, I think, 7 or 8 years now. So it made me think of that because you mentioned the book, The Magic Art of Tidying Up, I think. Which is about kind of decluttering and a form of minimalism, which is something I'm very interested in. So, but yeah, this toxic self,
aspirational purchases.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Aspirational purchases. Yeah. I think it's very interesting. So I'll have to send you that video, but
yeah, I remember reading something a while ago where it was like shopping or purchases can fill like an emotional hole or a need, but it does it temporarily.
Exactly.
If I make this purchase, it'll make me feel good, like, oh, well, you know, I am doing, I'm doing this, the things or making the steps.
I am going to start changing my life. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, just making the purchase isn't enough. You know, you have to follow through with the habits to do it. But in the moment, you feel good because you did something.
You feel hope, like you're actually going to do it this time.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is just crazy. And I feel like I'm just at the cusp of getting through some of that. Like when we just moved from a, you know, big like 3-story townhouse that we were renting into, you know, a tiny apartment. I'm so grateful for that. Because we purged a lot of stuff. This apartment has amazing light. Like, it's everything that I need. I don't need so much space, you know? And we got rid of a lot of stuff during that move because we had to, and B, we had to move very quickly. Mm. So it was just kind of, I remember holding a bunch of like watercolor stuff that I had purchased 5 years prior because I had always wanted to get back into watercolor because I did some art when I was in high school and I really liked it and I found it very therapeutic and I thought, okay, well, you know, I'm going to do that. So I, every once in a while, would like buy art supplies and then maybe attempt it. But I wasn't as good as I was when I was drawing every day or arting every day in high school. So I get frustrated that I'm not as good where I used to be, you know, that kind of thing. I have expectations of that. And so I'd get frustrated and never touch it again. And I remember looking at that and going, I've had this for 5 years and I have not started. I have 2 empty notepads here of watercolor paper. You know, I'm just going to donate this to somebody that will actually use it. Mm-hmm. So I did. I put it up for donation. Fast forward, like, and then somebody said, but I think it was my sister who said, but you've always wanted to do this. And I said, but you know what? If I actually do want to do it, then I will get the stuff again. Because as it stands right now, for 5 years, I haven't touched it. Right. So I got rid of it. And then fast forward a couple months, I now do Watercolor Wednesdays on stream and I had to buy a whole bunch of watercolor stuff. But the only reason that happened is because I wrote a list at the beginning of this year and I said, what are the things that I have always wanted to do but never said that I could do? I blocked myself, kind of like what we were talking about earlier, where I just either said, I'm not a morning person. This is one of the things that I've been trying. I am forcing myself. I have always been a night owl. I have always, you know, gotten up around 11 and stayed up till 3 or 4 in the morning. And I want to try the other way now. I want to try being a morning person. And for some reason, for the, you know, 30 some odd years, I've just assumed I'm one way and let it be that way rather than I can be whatever the heck I want to be.
Right.
You know, I'm the one stopping myself. I'm the one saying, oh, I'm not a coffee person. Oh, no, I'm not a morning person. Oh, no, I'm not a yoga person. Forget that. I want to try all of these things and see if I am this person. Some of the things I've not enjoyed. And so I've gone back, you know, but at least now I know rather than just making this assumption about myself. And what I've learned is I love being a morning person. I love getting up in the morning. If I can get myself routinely up there, my gosh, it's the best. I'm way more productive. My inner dialogue is nicer to myself in the morning in a creative space than it is at night. So, yeah, I don't know. Now I really am on a tangent.
Oh, no. I was just going to say on that, One thing, there's a book called The 5 Second Rule by Mel Robbins. Ooh. And it all boils down to...
I have to write this down, aren't I?
I mean, you should. But the Cliff's Notes is basically, if there's something that you want to do, like just getting out of bed, if you count from 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, at 1, there's this feeling that you have to spur into action, that something has to happen.
Are you about to change my life right now?
So
I think you're about to change my life.
So anything, it could be getting out of bed, it could be, you know, making a phone call, whatever. But you know, at the once you get to the end of that countdown that you have to do it, it's like, it's just magic. Like, okay, you know, I'm doing it. You stop.
You just
do it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you do it.
Oh my God. I'm going to start implementing this right away. Because I do, I will, because I'm trying to teach myself to be a morning person, my alarm mm-hmm. will go off and I'll sit there and I'll sit on Twitter or Instagram or something for like an hour. And then I'm like, well, shit, you know, I was supposed to be up an hour ago doing the things that I wanted to be doing. And now I've just kind of lazed about for an hour and a half, sometimes mm-hmm. 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, so I will try this 5 second rule. I'm going to grab this book. I'm going to check it out and I will try this rule and I'll see. But I can already tell just by the way you're describing it that it will probably work for me because time boxing works for me.
Oh, well, I mean, definitely for me too. But I think yeah. it's just like, because it's super simple and, you know, it's not like you have to plan ahead. You can say, yeah. you know, like, I want to do this. And it's just like, okay. And then 5 seconds, you know, and there really is something about just once you get to the end of that countdown, like something should happen. It's like if you were just watching a countdown online or something.
Yeah.
You know, you're expecting something. We're almost conditioned to it. Like the New Year's Eve countdown and, you know, something's happening. There's going to be fireworks. There's going to be a rocket that takes off. You know, like what happens at the end of that countdown? And for you at the end of that 5 seconds, it's getting out of bed, you know, or whatever.
That's amazing. Oh, my God. I'm going to message you after. I'm like really excited to try this now, which sounds absurd, but. Yeah. I'm just going to be waiting for something to try it on other than getting out of bed, you know, like right. or do the dishes or.
Yeah, I've done it. I've done yeah. it for basically like chores and stuff that yeah. I just really hate doing. yeah. But it's like, okay, it's worked.
But it works. Well, thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
I think we're actually also at time. An hour yeah. and 17 minutes. Oh, boy. You'll come on this podcast again, right?
Absolutely.
It was lovely talking to you. Thank you for being on here.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Is there anything
me.
Else that you wanted to say about the game, actually?
I think I've touched on sort of the things that I took away from it in terms of,
yeah.
of the themes and almost the life advice, really, that I felt like they were trying to give you.
Yeah, I think that's actually my favorite part, and I'm glad that we touched on that. Mostly just that we started talking about your decisions not necessarily being right or wrong, but, you know, this is going to take you, this is your life, you know, and don't squander it, but also just cherish it and cherish the people in it. And you're probably not going to get lucky enough to get stuck in a time loop to change shit. So
just go ahead and operate with the assumption that there will be no time loops.
There will be no time loops. Yeah.
I mean, overall, I think it was great. I there are so many layers. I'm sure we could like delve into so much stuff. It would take like a podcast series. But I think overall, like thematically and everything, it was a really interesting game.
Yeah, it was incredible. And it won awards also, which is fantastic. Like it deserved it. People called it a walking simulator, and I thought that was absurd.
I think
absolutely not.
Yeah, I had some people. I played it on stream, mm-hmm. and they, you know, they didn't understand what was going on, or you know, other people were just like, "This game is really weird. Like, what the hell?" But they were still interested in what was going to happen anyway. I think that they just probably weren't really paying attention to the dialogue. And yeah. that was where the meat of it came from.
It was a very real dialogue, actually.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that really stood out to me, is how real the conversation sounded. Mm-hmm. And because if I remember how it worked, as you walked, sometimes the conversations would continue. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes if you just continued on, they would stop. I think mm-hmm. like if you chose to stand there, they would keep talking. But if right. you went on, something different would happen. And yeah, the conversations were incredibly real. And I felt like, wow, this is very realistic dialogue. So I think that's actually probably what they won the award for.
Oh,
I have to take a peek now because I don't want to misspeak here. But oh my God, they were nominated for so many awards.
Oh, wow.
I did misspeak. The award that they won was Excellence in Visual Art.
Oh, but, well, yeah, it was excellent.
Yeah, it was excellent in that as well. But yeah, I thought that it won the narrative. But yeah, it was nominated for a whole bunch of narrative. Very, very good. Anyway, it's fantastic. Go play it. Would you like to tell everybody where they can find you on the World Wide Web, Miss Ginger?
I'm pretty much everywhere at @_UberGinger. Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, and more things soon to come. But
hopefully a podcast.
I mean, maybe.
Maybe. You really, really should. I'm just going to pressure you live, we're not live, but you should do that.
Because I think you've got a lot of
really insightful things to say. So.
Yeah, I plan to. I have that and a few other things. And it's just, I've taken a break from streaming because I'm trying to finally get
those other things.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, that's a good reason to take a break from streams so that you can do that kind of stuff that you've been putting off. You know, we're going to do the 5-second rule for those things.
Yeah. Except they
five,
take
four,
longer
three, two,
than
one, go.
Like, no, I'll start after the 5 seconds. Unfortunately, it takes longer than 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm taking a break. I mean, once I get those things off the ground, then, you know, I'll return to a stream. But I really want to get that stuff going.
That's good. I'm proud of you. And I can't wait to see what it is.
The Deep Dive podcast is brought to you by PBTV, and you can find us at deepdivecast.com as well as on Twitter and Instagram @DeepDiveCast. If you like what you hear, consider rating and reviewing The Deep Dive on iTunes. And if you'd like to, you can also support the show by visiting us on Patreon @PumpkinBerry. Patrons receive various perks like monthly black and white wallpapers, high quality versions of the episodes, bonus episode content, and of course the knowledge that you directly are keeping the Deep Dive afloat. See you next time, divers.
The Deep Dive podcast is proudly part of the Geek Generation Network. For more podcasts about your favorite geeky things like games or your favorite shows, browse our whole library at thegeekgeneration.com.